You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
ISIS claims responsibility for Kabul massacre. Huawei gets another temporary reprieve. Local governments in Texas sustain ransomware attacks. Google cuts a data sharing service. Smartphones could be used to carry out acoustic side channel attacks. And Hy-Vee warns of a point of sale breach. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Tamika Smith sitting in for Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Monday, August 19th, 2019. ISIS claimed responsibility for a suicide massacre that killed 63 people at a wedding in Kabul on Saturday. The attack targeted Shiites in the western part of the city and occurred just before the country celebrated its 100th Independence Day on Monday. According to CBS News, the group posted a statement on one of its websites saying the attack was carried out by a Pakistani IS fighter. Huawei has been granted another 90-day reprieve to continue maintaining its equipment and providing updates for its phones. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross made the announcement Monday morning on Fox Business. He said the extension was meant to allow rural companies in the U.S. to what he called wean themselves off. At the same time, Ross also announced that the Commerce Department is adding 46 more Huawei subsidiaries to its entity list. Officials in Texas announced that 23 state agencies sustained a coordinated ransomware attack on Friday, August 16th. ZDNet says the ransomware that was used does not have an official name, but it's being called the .jse ransomware after the file extension it appends to encrypted files. It's a relatively obscure strain of malware that was first seen in August of 2018. The Dallas Morning News reports that the state is responding with a multi-agency task force led by the Texas Department of Information Resources. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are also involved. Authorities believe a single threat actor is behind the attacks. Meanwhile, the state of Georgia is stepping up its efforts to train government employees following numerous attempted ransomware attacks against government departments last month. The Georgia Sun reports that Governor Kemp has added more members of his administration to the state government system cybersecurity board, which is tasked with creating mandatory cybersecurity training programs. A major question many in the cybersecurity field would like answered is centered around bug bounties. The CyberWire's Dave Bittner reports on the dynamics between the companies who are offering them and the folks that are going after them. He talks with Benoit, who's the chief security officer at Red Ox.
I've probably been working with bug bounties for about the last 5 to 8 years, and I've definitely seen a change from they were very much just in the technology scene. They were for smaller organizations, startups and things like that. And now you're certainly starting to see larger organizations, more established organizations start to adopt these types of practices. Ones that would ordinarily have never thought about doing this type of activity because they would have considered it far too risky. Folks in finance and now in healthcare as well. We're definitely seeing more adoption. This becoming much more mainstream, I would say. And also, we're actually starting to see the rewards more accurately reflect the type of value these kinds of bugs have. You're seeing organizations offering rewards in the tens or in some cases even hundreds of thousands of dollars, which really makes it worth that investment on behalf of a researcher to be spending the time to find these unique and interesting vulnerabilities in software.
Now, when you say that organizations previously would have found it too risky, what do you mean by that?
There is always a level of risk that you're exposing yourself to, depending on the type of data that your system is using or the type of processing you're doing. I think a lot of folks are always hesitant sometimes to potentially expose that. You don't want that information to be unnecessarily exposed, and you don't want even a well-meaning person to accidentally break a system. I think a lot of industries have kind of struggled with figuring out the right balance between supporting a program like this and getting the security value from it versus ensuring at the same time that they're protecting the systems from a potential, even accidental failure or abuse.
Now, wouldn't it have been the case that regardless of whether or not the organizations were supporting bug bounties, there were going to be folks poking around anyway out of curiosity, and I suppose those folks might not have had an avenue to report things if they wanted to do so in a proper manner?
Absolutely, and that's probably been my personal opinion for the longest time. I believe that regardless of what you say, people are going to poke at your application. And I do think that the real value that a bug bounty brings is it gives those people a safe way to do that, and they're not opening themselves up to legal prosecution. And so you end up ultimately being more informed about security problems because you don't have people afraid to report issues. And at the same time, they're able to do a testing and follow instructions in a certain way that reduces that risk of something going wrong. For example, within our bug bounty, we ensure that we give researchers explicit instructions about how to go about testing safely so that they are only interacting with parts of the system that can't, if things go wrong, actually impact a real production hospital or things like that.
So you have the opportunity there for the bug bounty itself to incentivize the folks who are out there looking for these things to do so in a safe and responsible way.
Absolutely. Especially if they follow the instructions that you put together. And that's why it's critical that you spend the time working on what your scope is and what your instructions are to these researchers to ultimately help them ensure that they don't end up putting themselves or yourself in hot water.
Now, what are some of the specific issues that folks are up against when it comes to bug bounties in the healthcare sector?
In healthcare, we deal with PHI, and so there are a significant number of regulations around dealing with that type of data, and for good reasons, in my personal opinion as well. One of the examples that I like to use is when it comes to my information and my data, if my banking credentials are exposed, even if I lose money because someone steals it out of my bank account, I can recover that funds. I can potentially change out those credentials. With this healthcare data or PHI, I can't change that. If that data is exposed, it's out there forever. I can't go and change that. And that's why this type of data within the black market has such a value attached to it.
Now, what are your recommendations for organizations that may want to start implementing a bug bounty program? How do they get started? How do they go about it?
The first thing is to be ready. Even if you're working with an outsourced provider like HackerOne or BugCrowd, there is a lot of overhead that you need to be prepared for. I'd probably say, and I'd say this is consistent with everyone who I speak to who's run one of these programs, the signal to noise ratio is very large. you're probably going to be dealing with, I'd say, 95% of the issues that are filed are just noise, or they're duplicates, or they're minor things that have been called out. So it takes a lot of time to work through all of that noise and figure out what is actually, what's the signal, what are the real issues that we need to investigate and be aware of. And I think that's the same across all industries. The second thing I would say is, again, spend the time working out what your scope is and how you're providing instructions and details to researchers about how they should go about testing your platform. We're also not a SaaS, your standard kind of SaaS application. And so that means that it's not just throwing the basic sort of like web application tests at us, which is, I'd say the same from a lot of companies out there. And so you need to really help folks understand what the platform is, how it works, what are the nuances with your particular application or system that will give you more meaningful tests from these folks.
That was Benoit, who's the chief security officer at Redox. Reuters says that Google terminated a service it had offered mobile carriers as a means of testing their network coverage. The company's Mobile Network Insight service had, since 2017, offered carriers data collected from Android users who'd opted into sharing location and performance data. Although the program was organized on a transparent opt-in basis and the data it collected were both anonymized and aggregated, Google apparently decided that Mobile Network's insights exposed the company to more regulatory risk than it wished to accept. Krebs on Security describes how cyber criminals hide their tracks by renting out bulletproof residential VPN services. Residential IP addresses are ideal for criminal activities because they're usually trusted by businesses and they periodically rotate between users. The use of residential connections to anonymize traffic is nothing new, but it's usually achieved by hacking a device on a residential network and using it as a proxy. In this case, Krebs discovered an internet provider that rented out these addresses for primarily fraudulent use. The Maryland-based company called Residential Networking Solutions, or ResNet, maintained a block of nearly 70,000 IP addresses. ResNet and several affiliated websites sold access to residential proxies for a monthly fee. They also advertised various types of spamming and botting services. About 7,000 of these IPs belonged to AT&T until late last year. Krebs discovered that the nonprofit that administered these addresses had apparently been tricked by someone posing as AT&T into transferring control of the IP block over to ResNet. It's not clear if AT&T had any connection to ResNet, but the mobile provider told Krebs it had referred the incident to law enforcement. Science Daily and other sources say that researchers at Southern Methodist University have developed a proof of concept in which smartphone sensors could record the sounds of keystrokes on nearby laptops, enabling eavesdroppers to capture and interpret those keystrokes. The technique does not seem to represent an immediate threat, but the researchers suggest it should raise awareness of the risk inherent in always-on sensors, like those in smartphones. ZDNet reports that the Midwestern supermarket chain Hy-Vee is warning its customers to keep an eye on their bank accounts after the company discovered unauthorized activity on some of its point-of-sale systems. The activity affected some of Hy-Vee's fuel pumps, drive-through coffee shops, and restaurants. The company did not specify which locations were involved, but says the activity has been stopped. Hy-Vee does not believe its grocery stores, drug stores, or convenience stores were impacted. The company notes that its investigation has just begun and more information will be forthcoming. And finally, TASS is authorized to disclose that Russia's sport minister sees a good chance that cyber sports will be added to the Olympics in 15 to 20 years. Minister Kolobkov appears to have video games in mind, not capture the flag competitions. Olympians, this is the moment you've been waiting on. Get ready to practice your Fortnite dance.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute and also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
Last week, you and I spoke about my musings about whether or not organizations should basically force their users to use a password manager, but also not allow them to choose their own passwords.
Correct.
Have those passwords be generated so that they are strong and random.
Yes.
Right. And we both sort of joked about how we would likely receive feedback from our listeners, and they came through.
Right. Yep. Did not disappoint.
No. So I want to read part of what one listener sent in. This is a particularly good one. This is from someone who goes by the name Jay. And he says, Dave and Joe had a great conversation about password managers and not allowing corporate users to choose their own passwords anymore. It's a great idea, but I'd like to offer another viewpoint. To stop users from choosing their own passwords, you need to do a lot more than enforce rules in the password manager. You need to be able to enforce that password policy on each of the identity stores slash authentication mechanisms the user is connected to. Turns out this is really tough.
Mm-hmm.
So let's address that part here. I think he's got a good point here.
Right. Because there's no way for me to know that the user is actually using a password from a password manager from the authentication mechanism in question.
Right.
Right.
So if your user wants to go rogue and use their own password, it's hard for you to control that.
Right. Exactly. You can't really mitigate that.
Mm-hmm. So he goes on and writes, I think the better approach is to invest the energy in true SSO, that's single sign-on.
Right.
It's matured a lot in recent years. Enforce MFA to log into the endpoint or at least have risk-based step-up authentication. SSO using those credentials so the users only have to remember one long, complex password to log into the endpoint and then SSO to everywhere.
Correct.
Hmm. Okay.
So this is true. First off, you're 100% correct about multi-factor authentication. Enforce that.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. And that actually is what my number one suggestion is now. Password managers are my number two suggestion. If you're going to do one thing to improve your security, use multi-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do two things, use multi-factor and a password manager.
Mm-hmm.
Single sign-on is great because it does a couple of things. One, it allows the user to frictionlessly move throughout their services that they need to move through, right? They don't have to continually log in. And coming from a perspective where I am not really in a domain right now at my job, I have to log into everything manually.
Mm-hmm.
It's still kind of a pain.
Yeah,
right.
Little speed bumps.
Yeah,
in your
little
day.
Speed bumps here and there.
Right.
That the other point that I would like to make about this is single sign-on is not going to be a full solution for this. There are going to be other places that are not going to integrate with your single sign-on solution that your users need to go to. And I'm thinking in particular like third-party websites where your users may need to go to look things up mm-hmm. or to use software that's necessary for their job, or even cloud services that may integrate with your SSO or may not. They may not integrate with it. In that case, what do? You have to make sure that their passwords are good and that they're using multi-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make sure their passwords are good, you have to use a password manager.
Right.
So I think his suggestions here are right on. And he has in this thing, he says, passwords needed to be killed a long time ago. And as much as I talk about passwords, I couldn't agree more with that statement. I don't think we're going to be stuck with passwords forever. Hmm. I think it's getting closer to the time where we're going to be able to get rid of them, like Jay says. And I welcome that time because I'll tell you, just having a simple password on your on any account is just asking to be hacked.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to Jay for writing this in, a very thoughtful response, and made us think a little more about this.
Yeah, Jay makes a lot of good points.
Good suggestions.
Thanks, Jay.
All right. Well, Joe, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.